told me, I don't believe it's 40%, that this Attic was there. But it was certainly a very well meant and friendly.
Sure, it was good. There's
no doubt.
Very positive.
And I'm sure the ratings are.
It's interesting that, you know, we forget these days how many, how much sacrifice people must sometimes go through in order to survive, even. And in your case, you do more than survive to continue to contribute. But I think that you're working up in Maine, wasn't it? Maine, cutting wood.
Mr. President, I kept working, admire your memory. Yes, it was in Maine, in New Hampshire, that work is farm work, because the real one single factor that's strange about me is that at age 37, I gained back a few commissions in infantry, and I used to be physically, now I'm an old man, but I was then physically an ox in strengths.
Yeah.
I rather could go out there and work as a farm work. I thought that was the only thing that I was permitted to do. Because a man with a family story like this, where his whole family is behind enemy lines,
sure.
Is of course naturally a man who cannot get a job.
Sure.
I understood that fully, and I want to say that nobody could have been more decent and objective than the FBI was with me. This is an unbelievable story, and they were so kind that I had to tell them, if I were sitting on the other side of the desk, I would be tougher, because you can't look into my soul. I could be a traitor. I could be a spy. You don't know that. They were so extraordinarily nice and human. This was one of the deepest reasons for my total inner attachment to the United States. You know, when you are powerless.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
then you know what other people are. You will never know it later, but you are powerful. People will try to play up to you. Remember, there's no power. Everyone can judge other people's humanity.
We are now in a position, a period shall we say, needless to put it, to use that understatement of enormous change in the world. We're in a period, too, where, as far as I'm concerned, I have no illusions about so-called good intentions of either the leaders in the Soviet or the PRC. I've always been convinced that exactly this is not limited to communist powers or leaders. It's all people consulted.
No, there are no good intentions on the outside, but I think one can say, and clearly you and Dr. Kissinger have seen it very clearly, the Podgorny-Brezhnev-Kosygin group. It's a bureaucratic group. These are no longer Stalins and Khrushchevs. And they strike to get what they get at a minimum risk. Very interesting how they withdrew from Egypt. But they have to have the feeling that they're incontrollable forces. And these young Egyptian officers seem incontrollable, so they withdrew. But they want to get into specific vacuum areas without risk, not with a confrontation. If there is a vacuum, they will immediately come in. That is why very often one has to play, I don't know, I've forgotten Henry's theatrical talents by now, I don't see him enough, whether he can seem at times near uncontrollable. That's the one thing which the Russians don't want. Now, Chinese is entirely different, because those are very great men. Mao Zedong's ideas are analyzed in the 1965. That's a very great man. Now, don't get me wrong, please, Mr. President, I'm a communist. He's a great man now. He's not yet the leader.
That's the least day.
Also, heroic. These are heroic men.
That's right.
We as bourgeois find that extraordinarily difficult to understand. Not because I wanted to show you something, I have to ask to show you, but let me know every day because I can read. Yes, it would, yes, it would. I sit 12, 14 hours and read. This morning I had 300 cables on my desk. And these cables I send home more regularly anyhow. Now, when you see these absolutely functions relating to military, political, military proselytizing, except for main force elements, or that receives combat functions, the others will continue as it did before, with terrorism, assassination, and so on. Now, there are no people who have the time to read hundreds of cables every day and see Zone as from the single stones of the mosaic. What the leaders can see is only summaries. I can see the single stones of the mosaic, and that's why I'm now very fearful about the ceasefire. I don't know, you may not wish to discuss it at all, and I certainly am not a man who wants to deflect you from what you want to say. For example, tactically, at this present moment, I have the places which unfortunately haven't. I would very definitely try to have the coming of the ceasefire into force, in legal terms, it's becoming effective, and the announcement of it as near together as possible, so that the enemy doesn't have time to use this gap between announcement and the actual effectiveness to jump forward. Secondly, I would make every tactical effort to have.
We have to proceed 12 hours.
12 hours, yeah. It's already, they will use the 12 hours. And then, you know, we have very clear custom directives that during the first 2 days of the ceasefire, they will not observe the ceasefire. Under the pretext that they were unable to get the word through. Now, we all must know that for 2 days, the other side will not really observe the ceasefire, except with main forces. Now, this is absolutely clear from their directives. And the other thing, Mr. President, again, a tactical aim. Now, I assume you make the great policy, I can only speak about the tactical, is the supervision international, let's say 5,000, 7,000, Venezuelans, Swedes, Austrians, or whoever's in there. If they come 2 or 3 weeks later, too late. In the meantime, many things can have happened. So, an other tactical aim might be simultaneity of the ceasefire and of the supervision. Now, this is a very difficult logistic problem, because if you get the people in, you will have the ceasefire later. But where is the rush? On our side, very probably not, because I'm sure, Mr. President, you have the conviction that whatever may decide these elections here at home, it will not be on the Vietnam issue.
Wrong.
Why is the rush? There's no rush.
No, we must. We've said what we said. We must do what is right. If we can do what is right early, let's do it. If it requires later, we will do it later. But the most important thing is to do what is right and in our interest of everybody concerned. That's all that's been so hard.
We have used the elections not in order to support the president, but in order to run up the other side against the deadline we could not change. In the past, we've always had a situation where when we gave a deadline, they'd make a concession just before the deadline, and then we'd have to change it. This time, we have a deadline that they cannot change. Probably it will not get settled before the election, incidentally, so we're not talking about
that. That would be good, because
we're not letting them think.
We are leaving it vague whether it will or not in order to get the maximum of concessions out of it before the election.
Basically, from a political standpoint, this country, we would prefer not to have
Republican tremor has been not that we have made concessions before the election. Our difficulty has been to think up demands which could protract it beyond the election, because every demand we make, they meet within 24 hours. So we are literally running out of proposals we can make to them.
That it's proposed that they should withdraw from South Sudan.
But we've made that now. But we've made the proposal, for example, that their prisoners have to stay in South Vietnamese jails. 40,000 political prisoners should stay in South Vietnamese jails, which we thought was unacceptable.
That's interesting.
And they have now accepted that their cadres stay in South Vietnamese jails. Now, you know that this is not an easy thing for them to sign a document which they release our prisoners, have to release South Vietnamese military prisoners, but all civilian prisoners stay in jail.
Do they perhaps think the ceasefire as such is such an advantage to them for the psychological reason that they are more disciplined, more homogeneous than they can be?
I think they're determined, but I think there's the other factor, which I mean, we never want to obviously underestimate these people, and I agree, they're always bad people. But they have taken a hell of a beating. I mean, the bombing has hurt, the mining has hurt, the attrition that has occurred to them in South Vietnam. I mean, when you stop the thing, not just what we've done in the north, but the 52, those six carriers we've had out there, and everything we have clobbered the bejesus out of, I think, therefore, that they just may have reached the point, and it's only temporary, I agree, where they're fought there, they may have read Mao. You know, he was always willing to retreat.
We may have been, in fact, too successful.
Let me say that after all this long ordeal is happening,
United States ever deal successfully, because this entity of 21 million, supported by the Soviets, by China, but not by their manpower, the engineer rather, is relatively so small that everybody from Rio de Janeiro to Copenhagen and from Hanoi to Moscow can draw the conclusion. Obviously, the enormous American power couldn't deal with this. Ergo, as a lawyer, I would say deduction de majore ad minus, or de minore ad minus, if they cannot deal with Vietnam, with whom can they deal? That lies the real
security. That's why the foreign policy of the United States is on the line. That's why it's always been. That's why when we, how easy it would have been politically to flush the whole thing in January the 20th, 1969.
Then I feel real strategic.
That's why, as we examine what we're doing, I really feel that we're, with those conditions in mind, that we are, we're meeting that challenge. We, of course, right now, we don't know where, we shall see what the North says, what the South says.
Certain degree of subtlety, which my
steel. Only for people that